Good day, and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin's fourth quarter 2016 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Dennis Jasmine. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin 2016 fourth quarter earnings conference call. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on the investor section of SNC-Lavalin website, which we will refer to during this call. Today's call is also being webcast. You can find the link on our website, and a replay will be available within 24 hours. With us today are Neil Bruce, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Sylvain Girard, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind you that, as detailed on slide 3, certain statements made during today's call and slide presentation about expected future events and financial results may be forward-looking and therefore subject to risk, uncertainties, and assumptions. These are described in our financial documents and could cause actual results to differ materially from what may be inferred from the forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements represent management's expectation as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We disclaim any intention or obligation to update any forward-looking statement except as required by law. You will find more information about the risk and uncertainties associated with our business in our financial documents filed with the Canadian Securities Commissions, which can also be found on our website. I would now like to turn the conference over to Neil Bruce.
Merci, Denis. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. On today's call, I will briefly review our 2016 achievements and results and discuss our segment's performance. Then I will ask Sylvain to discuss the Q4 results in a little bit more detail. As we can see on slide 4, we proudly delivered in 2016 on 5 of our 6 key objectives, delivering our E&C adjusted EPS in line with our guidance at $1.51, reducing our SG&A cost by $132 million, ahead of our $100 million target, delivering better-than-planned operating cash, concluding the disposal of our non-core businesses and growing our mining and metallurgy backlog. The creation of the mature asset fund is still being worked on, and we hope to complete its setup soon. Turning to slide 5, 4 strategic priorities will guide our efforts throughout 2017. We will continue our progress in operational excellence, driving improvements in every area. Several new initiatives will help us enhance our efficiency, delivery, competitiveness, and ultimately shareholder returns. The Q4 drive to further reduce our cost base, together with the business disposals we announced, will remove a further $100 million from our cost base in 2017. These actions are, to a very large extent, already complete. Our growth in difficult markets depends on strengthening further our client relationships and the delivery of consistent, excellent service. That's why we are determined to become an even more client-centric organization, which is our second priority in 2017. By consistently delivering innovative, technology-led solutions, we aim to greatly increase repeat business with our blue-chip client base. Thirdly, we will continue building a performance-driven culture that inspires our employees to go beyond contracted expectations to improve on everything we do every day. We aim to develop a culture that even better fosters innovation, creativity, and teamwork. Finally, we will remain focused on growing our business. 2017 organic growth will be largely driven by our infrastructure sector in Canada, along with our nuclear, renewables, and our sustaining capital offerings across all 4 sectors. Making good on these strategic priorities is essential to our success. We intend to generate consistent, strong financial performance through world-class execution delivered at top-tier margins. Turning to slide 6, I am pleased to report that for the second year in a row, we produced strong financial results in line with our 2016 guidance. In fact, we have continuously improved our adjusted diluted ENC earnings per share since 2013. In 2016, our net income attributable to shareholders reached $256 million. Our adjusted net income from ENC grew by 12% to $226 million, or $1.51 per diluted share, compared to 2015. We maintained a stable, diversified revenue backlog of $10.7 billion and a solid balance sheet with cash and cash equivalents of $1.1 billion. Due to our confidence in our long-term outlook, cash position, and diversified revenue backlog, we are raising our quarterly dividend today by 5%, sustaining a 16-year trend of increases. Let's now look at each of our segments, starting at slide 7. Our oil and gas sector had strong revenues of $1 billion in the quarter, its highest quarter of 2016, and the backlog remains strong at $3.9 billion. If we exclude the net favorable impact of $28 million regarding the two projects in the Middle East highlighted in Q3, the Q4 EBIT percentage returned to a more normal 7.1% run rate than Q3. We continue to see many large EPC and sustaining capital prospects and opportunities ahead, particularly in the Middle East and United States. Turning to slide 8, we are seeing positive signs for our mining and metallurgy sector, which had strong wins during the fourth quarter, increasing their backlog to levels only seen at the beginning of 2016. We are also pleased with their sustained EBIT percentage performance. We see many prospects and opportunities ahead of us, particularly outside of Canada. I am confident that we will see a sizable growth in backlog in this sector through the first quarter of 2017. Where we are well positioned to capitalize on our technical expertise and superior client relationships. Moving to slide 9, the power sector continues to do well, improving its EBIT margins. We've recently been awarded a further CANDU project in Argentina in the highly attractive nuclear sector. This six-month pre-project contract will allow us to engage with suppliers for long lead equipment, conduct preliminary design work, deliver safety analysis, offer licensing support, and provide technical assistance from Canada. And turning to infrastructure segment on slide 10, we're very pleased with the 2016 EBIT margin improvement and execution performance in this sector. Our major projects continue to progress well. Bidding activities continue to be strong, and we continue to see many opportunities here in Quebec, Ontario, and throughout Canada. It is important to note that following the completion of the sale of our non-core real estate facilities management businesses in Canada and our local French operations in December 2016, the company has removed $903 million from the December 31, 2016 infrastructure backlog, including $771 million from operations and maintenance and $132 million from infrastructure and construction. And lastly, turning to slide 11, our capital team continues to work closely with all four sectors to develop opportunities. We saw good examples of this in Q4 with the award of an approximately $100 million US dollars 10-year build, own, operate oil and gas services contract in the Permian Basin of the United States. As for Highway 407, we're very pleased again with the quarterly results. Revenues increased by 17% in Q4 2016 compared to Q4 of 2015, and the corresponding EBITDA increased by 25% for the same period. In summary, we're very pleased with our 2016 performance. We delivered on our commitments, met our 2016 guidance, and are well positioned within our industry to capitalize on organic and inorganic growth. Our diversified business model, solid balance sheet, and strong diversified revenue backlog give us confidence that we can meet our growth ambitions. We expect 2017 to be another good year for SNC-Lavalin as we continue to progress in our operational excellence efficiency program, drive our cost base down, and continue building a performance-driven culture to deliver for our clients. Therefore, we expect our adjusted diluted EPS from ENC for 2017 to be in the range of $1.70 to $2, compared to the $1.51 delivered in 2016. With that, I'll pass the call over to Sylvain to go over our financial results in more detail.
Thank you, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone. Turning to slide 12, ENC revenues for Q4 2016 totaled $2.1 billion, lower than Q4 2015. The variation was mainly due to a decrease in oil and gas, which despite having delivered its strongest revenue quarter of 2016, had revenues lower than Q4 2015, mainly due to completion of certain major projects. The mining and metallurgy segment continued to be affected by the persistent softer commodity prices. The infrastructure and power segments also had lower revenues in Q4 2016 versus Q4 2015, mainly due to near completion or completion of certain major projects, such as the Highway 407 extension, St. Justine Hospital, and transmission and distribution line projects. ENC SG&A expenses in Q4 2016 amounted to $201 million, slightly lower than Q4 2015. This was mainly due to the successful implementation of the Step Change Program and the ongoing Operational Excellence Program. Note that as the Step Change Program was launched in Q3 2015 and completed in December of that year, Q4 2015 already saw important savings from this program. It is also important to note that we have spent more in Q4 2016 in business development activities than in Q4 2015, but this was more than offset by a decrease in G&A. The adjusted EBITDA margin and amount from ENC was lower compared to Q4 2015, reflecting the lower segment EBIT, mainly from oil and gas and mining and metallurgy. Net loss from ENC was $38 million, or 26 cents per diluted share in Q4 2016. The loss was mainly due to a loss of $87 million on the disposal of our local French operations, partially offset by a gain of $43 million on the disposal of our real estate facilities management business in December. Concerning the loss on the sale of our local French operations in Q4, we believe this was the best economic option for all stakeholders. Despite restructuring and improvement efforts over the past few years, our overall business in France has not been capable of generating the required profitability. Also in Q4 2016, we have progressed with our long-term operational excellence program, and as a result of this program, incurred $88 million of restructuring costs in Q4 2016. We believe that these restructuring costs, which were mainly for severances, should remove, as Neil said, a further $100 million from our cost base in 2017 compared to 2016. On a segmented basis, there were lower contributions from oil and gas and mining and metallurgy in Q4 2016, while the contributions from power and infrastructure were in line with Q4 2015. Adjusted net income from ENC in Q4 2016 was $73 million, or 49 cents per diluted share, compared to $66 million in Q4 2015, or 44 cents per diluted share. The increase was mainly due to lower SG&A, lower non-controlling interest, and lower effective tax rate, partially offset by lower gross margin. Adjusted net income from capital was $43 million in Q4 2016 compared to $35 million for the corresponding quarter in 2015, mainly due to higher level of activity of capital investments and an increase in dividends from Highway 407 ETR. Our balance sheet remained strong at the end of December 2016 with a cash balance of $1.06 billion compared to $896 million at the end of September, and $1.6 billion at the end of 2015. Our revenue backlog remains strong at $10.7 billion, More details coming up on that. Now turning on to slide 13. We see that power, infrastructure and construction, and O&M segments, EBIT amounts, are in line with Q4 2015, while the mining and metallurgy and oil and gas segments were lower. The decrease in mining and metallurgy was mainly due to a lower level of activity due to persisting difficult market conditions in this sector and to the completion or near completion of certain major projects. But this was partly offset by lower SG&A. Note that this sector has recently been awarded some projects such as service contracts in Turkey and Russia and EPC contracts in Chile. Its backlog has returned to a higher level, and we expect a continued increased backlog for 2017. The decrease in oil and gas was mainly due to a low level of activity on certain major projects that are reaching or have reached substantial completion. This decrease was partially offset by a net favorable impact on gross margin of $28 million regarding the two projects in the Middle East highlighted in Q3. Note that the Q4 2016 EBIT margin for infrastructure and construction was 1.9%, lower than our targeted margin of 4-6%, but the segment closed 2016 with an EBIT margin of 4.2% compared to a negative 0.1% in 2015. The lower EBIT margin in Q4 2016 is mainly due to higher business development activities than in Q4 2015. Now moving on to slide 14. Our revenue backlog at quarter end remained solid at $10.7 billion. Our backlog was composed of 45% in reimbursable contracts and 55% in fixed price contracts, in line with the other quarters of 2016. Bookings for the fourth quarter were $1.9 billion, totaling $7.8 billion for 2016. As expected and mentioned at our last earnings call, our backlog decreased by approximately $900 million in Q4 due to the sale of our real estate facilities management division and French operations. If we remove these businesses from the December 2015 balance, total backlog would have been $10.9 billion, in line with this year closing balance. Overall, we have maintained a high quality and diversified backlog. Turning to slide 15. Compared to 2015, we have been able to significantly reduce our operating cash flow usage. Our operations essentially generated $106 million in cash, compared to a usage of $515 million in 2015. The 2016 improvement was primarily driven by a reduced working capital requirement of approximately $75 million on certain major projects, compared to $644 million in 2015. We also paid less tax in 2016 compared to 2015, as in 2015 we had to pay taxes on the gain we made on the disposal of our AltaLink investment in 2014. We continue to deploy efforts to improve our cash generation and to structure our projects to optimize our cash flows. We see on the right-hand side of the page that the cash generated by the disposal of capital investments, mainly Malta, was more than offset by various outflows, particularly $151 million of project-related capital expenditures, $76 million of net increase in receivables from long-term concession arrangements, $396 million of repayments for project financing loans, and $156 million of dividends to shareholders. Now moving on to the last slide, slide 16. As Neil said, we are targeting an adjusted diluted EPS from ENC for 2017 in the range of $1.70 to $2 per share. While we anticipate continuing market challenges in 2017 in certain of our sectors, we expect to benefit from our recent restructuring savings and operational excellence program. Except for mining and metallurgy, we expect increased segment EBIT margins for all segments in 2017 compared to 2016. We anticipate increased segment EBIT from the infrastructure and power segments, mainly driven by North American capital spending growth and global nuclear opportunities. For oil and gas, we expect the increased segment EBIT to come from increasing activities in the Middle East and United States. We expect mining and metallurgy segment EBIT to remain in line with 2016 due to persistent softer commodity prices. However, as said earlier, we do expect an increase in mining and metallurgy revenue backlog. This concludes my presentation. We can now open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure the mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 for questions. We'll go first to Sarah O'Brien at RBC Capital Markets.
Hi, good afternoon. Just on the outlook for 2017, it looks like you're still targeting 7% EBITDA margin. So I'm assuming the sales have to come down just to meet your guidance range. Just wondering, Neil, if you can comment on any changes in outlook in the past months in revenue or backlog opportunity by segment.
Good afternoon. I think if you look at the revenue piece, we probably have seen a softening in power, specifically around transmission, distribution, and in thermal power. So from that perspective, we really see that coming down a bit. That's the main bit. Probably the only thing. So maybe revenue's coming down a little bit. There is is probably what we see.
Okay, and maybe there was a difference in legal language in the notes to the financial statements about a potential pull forward of preliminary trial into 2017 from 2018. Just wondered if you can comment on how that may impact SNC's bidding or awards in 2017, and would there be any impact on the M&A timeline from management's perspective?
No, there wouldn't be any impact either in our bidding capabilities, because until the whole process is complete and until we get to a place where, we are found guilty of anything, and clearly everybody knows that we are robustly defending our position, then we are good to go on bidding through the integrity framework arrangements that we signed over a year ago. And on M&A as well, I mean, that would not be affected. We are going to continue to build the business as we see fit and generate the business for shareholders and deal with the legal issues as a separate subject.
Okay, and maybe just finally on the M&A, just following up on that, in terms of the opportunities that you're seeing now and readiness of the company to acquire and integrate something, if you can make some comments on where you are now relative to, maybe a couple of quarters ago.
Yeah, so I think in terms of readiness, I think we are in a position where if the right thing came along, we'd be ready to go, both in terms of confidence from our shareholders, confidence from the organization, our ability to do that. In terms of the practical sense, I mean, we're still looking at the theoretical universe of, what would the ideal thing be, or multiple things be. So, more infrastructure, power than resources would like, something that helped us become more sustainable in the regions that we're smaller in, so more ultimately being more global, and we'd certainly like it to at least remain or help with the balance in the business model between simplistically reimbursable and lump sum. So we're still in that theoretical look, but we are ready. I mean, if the right thing came along that was a good fit with most of the criteria, then we'd be ready to go.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move next to Michael Tupholme at TD Securities.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Just a question on the guidance for either Neil or Sylvain. When we look at the 2017 EMC EPS guidance, does that assume any further reversal of the provisions taken in 2016 in oil and gas or any other reversals of previously taken provisions for that matter?
Well, we don't go in that detail, I guess, in terms of what we disclose, but I guess the nature of our business is such that you'll have ups and downs across major projects linked to contingencies and so forth. So I think what we try to do with our guidance and our budget is essentially to have a balanced picture of the various, risk and opportunities that we see as we execute our projects. So that's probably the best way I can answer your question.
Maybe I could just clarify one point just for the avoidance of doubt. So in terms of our Q3 and our the oil and gas projects in the Middle East, you will have seen that in Q4 we recovered $28 million of the amount that we disclosed in Q3, and we're still very hopeful and confident that we're going to deliver more on that. So it's not about I just want to make sure that you don't think that somehow it's a worsening of that position, because it certainly is not.
Right. No, that's helpful. Thank you. I guess just secondly, maybe picking up on something Sarah mentioned, the 7% EBITDA margin target for the E&C business, unless I missed it, I didn't actually see that referenced anywhere, so I just want to confirm that that is still, in fact, the target.
Well, we're in a place where we're giving guidance in terms of EPS guidance. So, we don't particularly want to get into giving revenues and margin guidance as well. Otherwise, it's the complete picture. So. But we've got, we're not shying away from the targets that we've set inside the business.
Okay. Just lastly for me, the $100 million of additional cost savings that you announced today, will all of that be realized in 2017, or is that an annual run rate which may not be fully realized until you get to some point in 2018?
No, the intent is it'll all be in 17.
Okay. All right, that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Anthony Zika at Scotiabank.
Hi, good afternoon. Neil, how should we look at the proportional breakdown between your revenue mix and reimbursable versus fixed price percentage? Like, is it reasonable to still maintain a 60-40 outlook, and could it go up to 70-30? And if that would be the case, then what kind of impact could it have on EBITDA margins?
I think, we've talked a number of times about having that balance between the two, and I think, the reason that we talk about 60-40, 40-60 is because, it's not a... we're not in complete and utter control of that, so we can't define that precisely. But we do want that balance. And I think the other thing that tends to move us from a slightly more lump sum in the backlog to a more reimbursable in the revenues is the amount of call-off contracts that we do, which principally are all reimbursable. So the things that we do in terms of more, either in the seller doer model or in the, MSAs, the call-off contracts where we do a lot of work for clients on a reimbursable basis, never really gets into the backlog per se. So mm-hmm. So we're very, very focused on making sure that that we stick at least in that 60-40 split. And the more reimbursable work we do, in very general terms, depending on the sector, then the more secure we believe the increase in EBIT is.
Okay. And my last question, on the oil and gas front, in terms of the EBIT, could you reach the same levels as you did in 2015 going back?
Well, I think when we've talked about the margins in oil and gas, in very general terms, when we made the acquisition in 2014, we were talking about a circa 7.5% 7.5% EBIT margin. And, of course, then the oil price came down and we took a number of actions in terms of making sure that we reduced our G&A, not just in the company, but in the oil and gas sector, because we wanted to offset the pressure that we knew the customers were going to put on us in terms of gross margin. So, in general terms, we saw a 1% net decrease generally in the EBIT number, and so therefore our return to 7.1% here is really pleasing, because you know that's back in fact slightly ahead of generally where we were expecting the EBIT number to be post the pressure on the gross margin number.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll move next to Renaud Poirier at Desjardins Capital Markets.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just to come back on a previous question with respect to the 100 million cost saving that should be achieved this year, is there any costs or restructuring costs associated with those savings?
I think most of that was all incurred in Q4 2016, so we expect a minimal amount in 17 linked to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. And just in terms of bidding opportunities, obviously it's quite active right here. Just wondering if we see there's any big impact on the income statement when it comes in terms of bidding costs, and also from a working capital standpoint, assuming you're successful in 2017 in increasing your backlog, any big implication from a working capital standpoint?
Well, just on the first part of your question regarding, I guess, the cost of bidding, right?
Yeah.
That's all that is embedded in a net saving of 100, right? So yes, there will be increased cost in doing some bids, but at the same time, we're offsetting that with other savings in other parts or in G&A. As far as working capital, I guess it all depends on what we win and the deal structure of those. Now, some of those large deals we would hope carry with them a cash flow positive profile. Now, these awards are going to be late in the year, so it's hard to say, or later in the year, so it's hard to say if it'll be in time to generate some of that. But our aim is clearly to have cash flow positive profiles on those contracts as they get awarded.
Okay, thank you very much for the time.
We'll go to our next question from Jacob Bout at CIBC.
Good afternoon. So I wanted to go back to acquisitions. I think in the past you talked about large transformational acquisitions similar in size to Kent's. Is that still how we should be thinking about that?
Well, like I said earlier, it's we run a theoretical model in terms of ideal size. You know, would we rather do one than three? Yes, it's easier to integrate. It's less pressure on the organization. So it's a theoretical exercise. We'd rather do one than three. We'd like it to be across our three of our sectors, two or three of our sectors. We'd like it to be, geographically enhancing, and we'd like the business model to be, probably a bit more reimbursable than lump sum. So that's a theoretical model, and we just need to keep looking at the opportunities that there are and see who best fits that, whether it's one, two, or three companies. So it's a preference, but it's a theoretical model at the moment.
And then as we think about organic growth going forward, Is there any reason why it would be different or would not mimic what we're seeing as far as backlog growth? Is there any notable contract wins that, that are not reflected in there?
I think there is a piece of what I was talking about earlier in terms of NSA type work, call-off work, seller-doer model type work that's not in there. But really, when you know, so that you know that will roll through as we you know as we execute the work through through 17. But then, of course, the big piece in terms of organic growth is you know the biggest piece is the infrastructure Canada in terms of you know we're in the shortlist on. Gordie Howe, George Massey, Finchwest LRT, the Montreal LRT. There's a next phase on Ottawa, you know, just to name but a few. So we see potential large organic growth in there. We still see some great organic growth in nuclear, in renewables, and then the call-off type work that we tend to do tends to be in the sustaining capital arena, and we see good opportunities across all four sectors in sustaining capital.
So we should be thinking about low single digits?
For 18.
For organic growth?
For 18. So I think, you know, 17 is going to be a big bid year. Of the initial ones that I talked about, you know, I expect that we're going to be successful on a few of these, so they will go into the backlog. But in terms of kicking into execution, that's really the majority of that's going to be in 18.
Last question. You gave yourself an X here on the setting up a new structure for the North American concession investments. When do you expect to accomplish this, and what does it look like?
Yeah, so we, as you probably remember, we were hoping to get that done in 16 and even in the first half of 16 when we started the year. So at this stage, we see this as a 17 event. I think it's progressing nicely at this stage. I mean, as I said earlier, I think on prior calls, it took us longer than anticipated in getting the setup done because these assets had not been set up or I guess built in order to be placed into a fund down the line. So it took us a bit of a while to arrange for that so that we don't lose value in the process, essentially. So I think progress is being made in a nice way, and we see that as a 17 event.
Okay, thanks. Very helpful.
We'll take our next question from Yuri Lynk at Canaccord Genuity.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Sylvain, maybe for you, are you able to quantify the amount of revenue that was generated in 16 by the two businesses that were sold in December?
It was about 400.
400.
I think it's about 400 million, but let us dig through that quickly, and we'll come back to that.
Okay. Sounds good. And the 100 million in additional cost savings for 17, is that going to be all in on the SG&A line for the E&C business, or is some of that up in gross margin?
It's SG&A in total for the company. Most of it being E&C, but it's SG&A.
Okay, helpful. I thought the oil and gas bookings were surprisingly strong. Can you give any color to what went on there, and maybe anything get pulled forward into the quarter, and I guess more importantly, has the duration of that backlog changed much over the last year, I guess? Just trying to figure out
No, nothing specific, I would say, in terms of change of duration, in terms of the bookings of Q4 versus what we've seen in prior quarters.
The one thing that we're particularly pleased with, of course, is that, you know, we've got a really strong quarter at the same time as we essentially completed the demobilization of the Gorgon project. So, you know, the demobilization of the Gorgon project and, you know, that large project coming out of both backlog and revenues was always a challenge, you know, back in the back end of 2014. And effectively, we've been able to replace that and increase it slightly. So, but nothing unusual there, just good performance by the team.
Okay. Just to get back to your question earlier, so it's about 450, so 250 for the O&M bit and 200 for France.
Okay. Last one. Can you just give a little flavor as to the bookings you expect in the mining group, either by commodity or region? I think it's, you said Q1 this quarter that we're in now. You expect some significant bookings.
Yeah, we do. We are well positioned on a number of bids. Getting good indications there, and we see. I mean, I know the mining group is still by far the smallest sector, but we do see, you know, significant growth in terms of the backlog in the first quarter. I'd expect to see, you know, us at least doubling the backlog by end of Q1.
Okay, thanks, guys.
We'll move next to Maxim Sytchev at National Bank Financial.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a quick follow-up question in relation to Australia. Actually, when I look at the backlog there, it's up year-on-year. And Neil, as you mentioned, because you're coming off of Gorgon, so what's driving that backlog increase, if you don't mind, please comment.
It's a variety of contracts across the Middle East, really. I mean, and good performance in the North America, specifically the US. But in the main driver is the work that we're doing across the Middle East, predominantly Saudi Arabia, but Abu Dhabi, Dubai for some other countries, work that we're doing in Qatar. So it's a pretty powerful region for us at the moment.
Right. So, but that's in relation to the totality of oil and gas, and I wanted to ask specifically on Australia why the backlog is up there year on year.
I'm not sure what specifically the Australia backlog.
Yeah, because I think if in your disclosure, the percentage coming from Australia has increased, or not just the percentage, not the absolute numbers.
Not the backlog. So the actual in that's really just a big surge in the completion of Gorgon for one, but the ramp up on the INVEX ICSIS projects.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, Sylvain, maybe going back to the working capital dynamic, the thing that I'm trying to understand is that, I mean, the revenue trajectory has flattened a little bit right now, and the working capital commitments are less. But have you done anything structurally different that will enable you to preserve the free cash flow generation even in a ramping revenue environment? Just trying to get a better understanding of those puts and takes.
Well, I think there's actually not just one dynamic that happens with our backlog or our business as it relates to cash or working capital. What happens is on the large lump sum projects, as I said earlier, we try to get cash flow positive on those projects as they get awarded. And what you will sometimes see, and we saw that over the past couple of years, is that you, if you replenish the number of those lump sum projects, you can manage to maintain your, you know, the projects underway, and as they complete, they will use cash at some point in time, so they get cash flow positive from the start, and then they use cash at some point as they reach completion. So you have to replace that usage with new awards that are also cash flow positive. So you have that dynamic that happens. The other dynamics is on the, you know, engineering services or reimbursable, you'll tend to have sometimes, you know, more of a normal payable or accounts receivable cycle, which means that you will lag the work. So you will do the work, you'll build the work, and then get paid for the work. So that requires some investment in working capital if you grow that part of the business. So I don't know if that answers your question, but you have really two dynamics there going on, and we're trying to manage both. All I'd say structurally, I think what we're really paying a lot of attention to is the cash flow profiles of the larger projects to make sure that we are above the line, so to speak. And then on the ones that will follow a more traditional accounts receivable cycle is obviously managing DSOs and terms of collections.
Okay, that is helpful. And maybe just last question in terms of capital allocation. I mean, obviously, M&A is part of the toolkit. Any thought process in terms of share buybacks, especially at this level and this implied valuation? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, not at the moment, but we always, you know, we talk about that at every board meeting just to check in, make sure, and see whether, you know, we ought to do that as, you know, as one of the tools in terms of the whole capital allocation, but no plans at the moment.
Okay. Is there something structurally that precludes you from doing that, or you just feel that you would get better return on invested capital elsewhere?
Yeah, we believe that invested capital elsewhere will give us a better return. If we can't come up with good ideas in that space over a period of time, then we'll need to consider it.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Frederick Bastien at Raymond James.
Good afternoon. I just have one question. Are you comfortable with the quality, the health, and the positioning of your existing businesses across your markets and regions? Put differently, are you pretty much done with selling assets?
Yes, we are.
Perfect. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we'll go to David Silver at Morningstar.
Yeah, hi. I would like to come back to your most recent cost-cutting program that was announced today. And I guess this is probably a little naive, but this is your third effort at reducing costs, mainly in SG&A, I think in a relatively compressed time period. So I was wondering if you might be able to add a little color as to how this latest program might differ, and in particular, why this latest effort won't seriously diminish your service capability or your marketing business development capacity. Thank you.
Okay, well, maybe taking the last piece first. I mean, what you'll see is that the $100 million is the net number. So what you'll see in terms of sales, so in terms of SG&A, our S is actually going up. But that's being compensated by the reduction in G&A. And basically, you know, I'll never give any apology for, you know, continuing to look to reduce G&A, because basically it's a cost that makes us either competitive or not. So we need to be constantly making sure that we have a very competitive G&A in the marketplace out there, and that in turn allows us, with the combination of the increased spend in BD and sales, actually gives us a better opportunity to win work and grow. And that's really our objective. Our objective is not about cutting G&A. It's about being as competitive as possible in order to win more work, expand, and do more work.
Okay, thank you for that. And then I had maybe a bigger picture question about the opportunities that your company might see in the United States market. So, you know, in a speech the other day, our president announced or discussed something on the order of a $1 trillion infrastructure program. And I know it's extremely early, but in general, I think your company's had a relatively small presence in the United States. There have been a couple of recent awards that are that were announced. But I'm just wondering, you know, basically with the economy here maybe picking up with shift in currency relationships and new administration, whether, you know, your company looks at the opportunities here a little bit differently in any, you know, significant manner. Thank you.
Thank you. No, that's a good question. The so I think the first thing is our outlook is based on really in the infrastructure space is a concentration on Canadian projects. So if something interesting in our sweet spot, so in rail and transit in particular, came up that was attractive, then of course we would be interested in pursuing that. But our outlook and the outlook we published today is pretty much exclusively on Canadian infrastructure. So anything that we were to pick up in that sweet spot in the U.S. would all be upside.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go next to Sarah O'Brien at RBC Capital Markets.
Hi, just a follow-up on the oil and gas segment. There was some comments in the MD&A about, I guess, the old Valaris business seeing some negative impact from challenging market conditions. Just wondered if you can comment, given the U.S. has been quoted as a growth area for next year, how that might impact your margin in 2017.
Well, I think maybe I could start and Neil can add to this. It's true it's been difficult through the year, especially the first half, and then we started to see in the Valaris piece of our business some pickups in the U.S., but also how that business can contribute to some projects outside of the U.S. So we're hopeful that 17 will definitely be better than 16 in that piece, in that pickup.
Yeah, and I think that is the, I mean, that's really what you should take from that, which is it was a pretty tough year for them in 16 across the year, but we do see more prospects. So the build, own, operate contract that we announced is very much a Valaris high involvement from Valaris, and there's a number of other prospects there in the U.S. But we just like to be in a position where we secured a few of these before we started to talk the business up again.
Okay, and in terms of the margin that you're bidding these at, I mean, has the margin profile improved at this point, or is it still, you know, pretty subject to a significant increase in activity?
Yeah, I mean, it's so strange as it may seem, it's never really been about a margin. It's about whether these projects actually happen or not. Once the economics work and they happen, then, you know, we pretty much get our desired traditional margins. So we're not having to bid really, really low in order to win these projects. There is not a massive amount of competition. So they tend to be, you know, are we the ones that can deliver, you know, in the shortest possible time in order to get some of the product to market or not? And we would win more on our ability to give an earlier schedule than it would be on, you know, the margin.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And that does conclude today's question and answer session. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Jasmine for any closing remarks.
Thank you very much for having us join us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Thank you very much, and have a good afternoon. Thanks.
And that does conclude today's conference. Again, thank you for your participation.